I pledge allegiance to the flag of the multinational corporations and to the profit for which they stand, one interlocking directorate under no government, indivisible, with monopoly and cheap labor for all.
The time is now.
Wake up, America!
On November 4th, we must stand up and say, eight is enough.
Somebody let Robert play with the sound bites again. Look what he came up with. Good afternoon, Angie Coiro. This is the Angie Coiro Show live from Green 960 in San Francisco. Welcome aboard, everybody. This is our daily toss salad of politics, the environment, and the utterly absurd. Masterfully helmed by Heidi Hartley on the phone lines, who puts the show together, and Robert Costa running the board. It's the day we promised. We're taking the entire show today to talk about the various accounts and theories, official and otherwise, behind 9/11. What actually happened that day? Big topic to cover, I say unnecessarily. Obviously, that is so. The best thing you can do when you only have so much of a radio show to devote to a topic like this is to decide what you're not going to do. First of all, we are not running the normal amount of commercials, and that is courtesy of a sponsor. I want to right off the top thank them. That is Solar City. You've been hearing Solar City as a new sponsor of the show for just the last 2 days, and they have decided to help us make this day a limited commercial interruption show. And thanks very much to the folks at Solar City. Here and there, I'll tell you throughout the show little bits about them. For example, you can go see them at solarcity.com. I'll tell you a little bit more about them here and on, but a sentence or two as opposed to whole commercials, and I thank them so much for that, solarcity.com. Secondly, I'd be happy to be wrong, but I wager none of you will turn off the radio at the end of this hour and say, wow, we got that settled. Probably not. What I do hope to bring you is some more insight and some more information on whatever facts or factoids you may have heard about this in the past. Thirdly, at best we can provide an overview. Information on 9/11, all the theories, all the speculation, all of the controversy is out there in force, in books, in magazines, on the internet. Talk somebody up on the train. They've probably got their own theory. So the best we can do, and I hope to do it, is to delineate some specific areas of discussion for you, bring you point A from one side and point Z from the other side, and let you go free from there to learn whatever you care to learn. Okay? One more point, and then we'll bring on our guests. The other point, this point is, it's about our phone calls, and we know that a lot of you are very interested, and you have opinions that have formed over a great amount of time with a lot of information. It's probably going to be difficult for any one of you who has studied this to get on the phone and keep it short, but I need you to do that. We already have the phones lighting up. I know everyone wants their point of view to be heard. I ask you to rest assured there are many others who hold your point of view and have studied the same facts. What we want to do is get as much out there as we can. So here are the ground rules for the phone calls today. Unlike our usual day, we won't allow people to come on and say, I have 3 points to make. I'm sure you do, but we can't accommodate you. If you have a brief 1 or 2 sentence comment before you go directly into your sharpened quick question, we'll be glad to accommodate you. If you start to give a speech, I'll have to let you go. If you start to ask something or make points other than what you have discussed with Heidi on the phone, I'll have to let you go. Okay, and that's just out of courtesy, out of the people who are already lining up. One last thing is, if you want to know my own bias, I'm going to tell you ultimately, I don't know. First of all, this subject is so vast, and I have not paid as much attention to it as many other people. It's been a real illuminating journey for me to read all the theories. Oh, gosh, no, nobody's read all the theories. To read so many of the theories and speculation and facts behind all of this. I don't have an opinion. If I do, it is unknown to me, and it's a bias that I am not aware of. I'm going to do my best for you, as our listeners who requested this hour, to give equal time to the points of view that we've brought our guests on to represent. And that is the best I can do. And all I can tell you is my heart's in it, and I hope you can forgive me any slip-ups that may occur to your ears. Okay, that's it. With that, let us bring on our two guests, and I'm sure they're familiar to who, those of you who've been following this for so long. Richard Gage is, in fact, a Bay Area gentleman. He is an architect and founding member of AE911Truth.org. Richard Gage, I want to welcome you to the show, and I know we've had to schedule it a couple of times, and I thank you for kind of bouncing with the changes with us.
You're very welcome, Angie. It's great to be here with you.
Michael Shermer is on the line as well. He's the founder of Skeptic Magazine, adjunct professor of economics at Claremont Graduate University, and he has sung this same song several times, too. So, again, Michael, I thank you as well.
Hi.
Let me first start with the why, because when we go into all these various theories of what went wrong and what we're not hearing about, Richard Gates, to start with you, why are we even provoked to look askance at the mainstream government view of what happened on 9/11?
We have not received an adequate representation of the physical evidence available at the crime scene on 9/11 with the three collapses of these high-rise towers. And so it has not gotten into the mainstream media yet. So we have 18 points of physical evidence that we want to make sure your listeners are aware of today.
Michael Shermer, if I take that over to you, are you completely satisfied with the official conducting of investigation and the official conclusions of the investigations?
Well, for the most part, yes. I mean, Osama bin Laden said he did it. They tried to blow up the buildings back in 93. They successfully did it in 2001. They've blown up embassies around the world and attacked us in various places. So I see no reason to doubt that they did what they said they did and said they wanted to do and tried to do. So from that point forward, the idea that somehow the Bush administration orchestrated 9/11 or whatever, there's various 9/11 inside job theories about that, it starts to unravel from there. And in any case, the architects and engineers involved in the actual construction of the World Trade Center buildings, who had no particular axe to grind politically and are not government agents or anything like that, they seemed satisfied with the architectural and engineering reports on why the buildings collapsed, and they were involved in trying to piece it together themselves because, you know, who knew?
Okay, Richard Gates, let me take that point over to you. Are you as satisfied with that idea that the architects have no particular axe to grind, no particular hidden agenda?
Well, there's a couple of dozen architects and engineers supporting the official theory, and that's all there is, whereas we have over 475 architects and engineers demanding a real investigation based on the evidence at the crime scene for controlled explosive demolition. With or without respect to what Osama bin Laden may or may not have confessed to, or the Bush administration may or may not have done, we focus on the science-based forensic evidence, particularly these 18 points of evidence, beginning with the fact that all three of these World Trade Center high-rise buildings fell at free-fall speed, virtually, into their own footprint in the case of Building 7, and almost, and in the case of the Twin Towers, everything is blown outside the footprint. And 98% of the material is blown outside. We're looking for 110 floors at the base of the Twin Towers, and guess what? We don't see one, not one, of these acre-sized floors. 90,000 tons of concrete is found at the base of. It's all been pulverized into a fine powder. It takes incredible explosive energy to do that. Explosive energy which blew out windows 400 feet away and ejected 4-ton perimeter wall units 600 feet away, exiting the North Tower from the 76th floor at 55 miles an hour to land on the Winter Garden.
Michael Shermer, I know that you'll want to respond to all that, and I guarantee you I will allow you to do that. I'm going to have you do that as soon as we come back from a traffic report. Sebastian Coons has got to let our folks know what's going on the roads. I'm sure a lot of listening on their radios. So let's move to that. We'll pick up with Michael Shermer's response to Richard Gage on our 9/11 hour here, sponsored with limited commercial interruption thanks to the generous support of Solar City, who makes solar power possible for everyone. I'm Angie Claro. This is Green 960.
And I'm...
Okay, let's take it right back to Michael Shermer. Michael Shermer, we have points from Richard Gage there with lots of facts and figures. Address that as you will, and please keep it as brief as you can. Michael Shermer? There he is.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay.
First of all, the buildings did not fall at free fall, slightly slower than free fall, as the engineers, official engineers' report showed, and you can watch it yourself. It's not completely free fall. Although, still, it's impressive. Why would a building fall flat, straight down? Why wouldn't it topple over? We always picture, like in the old Japanese monster movies, you know, swiping the buildings away and they topple over. The answer is that they're not a solid block of material. Most, about 95%, 90 to 95% of a building, an office building, is empty space. It's just air. It's the space that the offices in which the people work. So they're held together by these structural foundations and so forth, so that they can't fall straight over. They have to collapse pretty much straight down. In any case, it wasn't straight down in a perfect footprint. I mean, obviously, you can watch the videos. The debris flies all over the place. And, in fact, there were several buildings in the World Trade Center complex that were severely damaged by the debris that did not fall straight down, fell out, Building 7 being the obvious one. But it wasn't the only one. I mean, there was lots of buildings around there that were badly damaged by the flying debris.
Richard Gates, there's been a new report out from a national agency that has readdressed these same issues. Are you any more reassured by that than you were by the earlier reports?
No, the new report is fundamentally flawed. It contradicts the evidence of fire spread in Building 7. Most of our listeners don't understand that Building 7 is a 47-story skyscraper, a football field away from the North Tower, and it did collapse at free fall speed for the first 2.5 seconds. This is well documented by physicists. And in order for a building to collapse at free fall speed during that 2.5 of the first seconds, the columns have to be removed. In other words, the building can't fall at free fall speed and crush 40,000 tons of structural steel at 400 structural steel connections per second. It has to slow down if it's doing that work. Therefore, we propose that probably on the fifth and sixth floors, the mechanical floors of Building 7, is where these incendiaries, which we have, were placed. When we do have physical evidence for incendiaries at Ground Zero for the destruction of all three of these high-rise buildings produced by the byproduct of thermite, which is molten iron, seen, tons of which were seen by the first responders, they said, flowing like lava. The World Trade Center structural engineer himself, Leslie Robinson, says as of 21 days after the attack, molten steel was still flowing. FEMA documented melting of girders. Guess what? Fires can't melt steel.
Okay, you know what, Richard Gates, just out of the interest of time, I'm going to interrupt you there and bring on a caller. Our line, by the way, let's open these up, 866-960-5753 is the number to call, 866-960-5753. Remember, please, to keep one brief question and keep it sharp so we can get to it right away. And Michael Shermer, I'm going to give you a chance to respond to that. I'm going to add to it, though, Robert in Daly City, who has a question along the similar lines, so let's integrate that. Robert in Daly City, thanks for joining us.
Mm-hmm. All 11 conditions of a controlled demolition were met on 9/11. First responders testified of explosions. William Rodriguez.
Okay, no speeches, please. Get your question.
All right. Well, the thing is, the laws of physics on September 10, 2001 did not change concerning the laws of physics on September 17, 2008.
Okay, you know, I'm going to have to let Robert go because initially Robert's question was going to be about how could the steel actually melt there. So let me take those two combined questions over, Sherman.
Yeah, it doesn't have to melt. It only has to weaken for the floors to collapse. And jet fuel burns plenty hot to weaken the steel to about 50% of its tensile strength in order to then weaken enough to collapse. But we have to remember, it wasn't just the jet fuel burning for the few minutes there. It was for many, many minutes after that, all the carpeting and drapes and paper and desks and all the other combustible material in the building that was also burning, and that drives the temperatures up even higher. But again, it doesn't have to be all the way up to over 2,000 degrees for the melting point of steel. It only has to be maybe 50 to 60% of it to weaken it enough to collapse.
And so the question remains, what did melt the tons of steel that was found by the first responders and iron workers and World Trade Center structural engineer at the site? And so the only plausible answer for these pools of molten iron, which is what it turns out to be, molten iron, is thermite, this high-tech incendiary.
Okay, let's see if Michael does think that's the only plausible explanation.
No, I don't. I have not seen first responders reporting seeing melted metal, only just weakened metal. I think the more central question is if the buildings weren't brought down by the impact of the planes flown by Al-Qaeda, who do you think intentionally blew up the buildings?
Well, the 475 architects and engineers who are demanding a real investigation are not conspiracy theorists. We're building technical professionals. A real investigation, which we would hope that you would support, would answer some of these questions. including why are there dozens of first responders and iron workers who did in fact see the molten metal, which we have photographic and video evidence of. People can see it on our website, ae911truth.org.
I think one thing that both of you could agree on is that there are benefits to having a lot of this on the Internet, but technology also plays against the finding of the ultimate truth because so many things can be doctored nowadays. And I'm not saying this is what's happening, Richard Gage, but I'm just saying this is a reason people may not believe it. They can look at a picture and say, oh, well, somebody photoshopped that.
This is why we go back to the evidence available at the crime scene, video evidence, photographic evidence, quotes from the first responders and the World Trade Center structural engineer himself, as well as Abu Hazan Astani, a structural engineer from here in Berkeley who had unfettered access to the Fresh Kills landfill, where he documented that he saw melting of girders. FEMA documented intergranular melting, sulfidation, oxidation. Fires never done this to steel. And all of a sudden, for the first time in history, we have fires that have done this. In fact, fires have never brought down a high-rise steel frame building ever before due to the properties, the incredible properties of steel. And Building 7, remember, was not hit by an airplane. What brought it down at free fall speed in 6.5 seconds?
Okay, I know that we've established that both of you disagree one of the things I said at the beginning is we're not going to reap points of agreement. So we know that the free fall speed is something that you disagree on, and we also agree that the melted metals is something that you both disagree on. Let's go back to the concept of an explosive, and I've read this both as thermate and thermite. Michael, can you give an explanation as to why this explosive was apparently found, not only found in the aftermath, but apparently to some people who are familiar with its physical composition or its chemical composition say that it is reflected in the orange color of the flames as they came out?
No, there's nothing unusual about the flames. And in terms of the forensics on the mineralogy is that there was no explosive devices found. I've seen no reports at all of the rescue operations people finding like explosive devices and squibs and the various kinds of explosive devices used to bring buildings down. I mean, that would have been the first giveaway right there, and actual explosive devices that you would find in the debris of a collapsed building.
Well, in fact, we're told by NIST and FEMA that they did not look for it. So how can you find what you're not looking for?
Well, but they cleaned out the whole place.
Let him answer. Richard Gage, let him answer.
So surely somebody would have come across something going, hey, what's this? But even with that, even beyond that, how would all of these workers, they gotten into the World Trade Center buildings for the days or weeks before, planted all of those bombs in all the right places without anybody noticing? I mean,
well,
this isn't like, you
okay,
know,
and in turn,
library.
In turn, Michael, let Richard answer that since you posed the question.
But the World Trade Center building, they did attempt to blow it up in 93, and they found the evidence for that. Why did nobody notice all these people planting bombs?
Okay, Richard, why?
There is indeed plenty of evidence for thermite at all three buildings. We have iron-rich microspheres.
And I mean the people planting the bombs. Nobody
well, let me answer.
Them?
I'll answer both questions. Give me just a minute. We have iron-rich microspheres found in all of the dust samples that anybody has found, not only by Dr. Stephen Jones, physicist from Brigham Young University formerly, but R.J. Lee and USGS as well. They're small as a hair. How do they get there? Well, in an explosive environment with molten iron as the byproduct of thermite, this stuff would be atomized and then cool and come down in the dust. And so it has the chemical evidence of thermite, including iron, aluminum, potassium, manganese in abundance, and fluorine, an oxidizer for thermite. Now, how could somebody have planted all this stuff in? Because what you'd need is to have access through the elevator hoistways just to the core columns and beams. And in fact, there was an elevator modernization going on in the core. Workers were in there the 9 months prior to 9/11, ACE Elevator had the contract, and it is a very plausible mechanism for planting these explosives. In the case of Building 7, the 5th and 6th floors were mechanical floors, and our structural engineers, 24 of them, in fact, a couple of them have suggested that all you need to do is take out the 5th and 6th floors, the columns there, which would produce the 2.5 seconds of free fall, which is observed by physicists in the building.
Let me remind our listeners that you're listening to Richard Gage. He's an architect. That's the last voice you heard. He's founding member of AE911truth.org. Michael Shermer, founder of Skeptic Magazine and adjunct professor of economics at Claremont Graduate University, is our other guest. Michael, I'll let you respond to that, and then we need to go to another traffic report.
Well, he just identified the Elevator Maintenance Corporation company as the culprits who planted the bombs. Well, that's libelous right there. I mean, if you don't have evidence for that, sir, I mean, you've just opened yourself up to a lawsuit threat. You've just accused an elevator maintenance company. Would you care to give the name and who you think actually planted the bombs?
Yeah, we don't know, but a real investigation would determine this. But
right.
We do know that
there was an elevator
modernization going on the 9 months prior to 9/11. Everybody knows whose it was. It was documented in Elevator World, and we want Ace Elevator to be asked some real questions in a real investigation, which we did not have in NIST, FEMA, Weidlinger, or the 9/11 Commission report. These have been whitewashes, and the American people demand much better of their government.
Okay, as promised, we're going to go at this point to a traffic report. When we come back, we're going to move away from the World Trade Center per se. We're going to move over to Flight 93 and talk about that. We're going to try to clear off the table, if we can, some of the more fringe theories about what happened on 9/11. I think Richard Gage can let us know which of those he considers not worth responding to. And we'll talk more about all the aspects that we can fit in before the top of the hour. We'll go to more of your phone calls. 866-960-5753. 866-960-5753. Again, when you call, be prepared to have Heidi help you up with sharpening up your comments and your questions so we can fit as much into this hour as we can. You won't be hearing too many spots this hour because Solar City has helped us out by making this a limited commercial interruption hour. If you want to install a solar system, they want you to know it only takes a little down payment and a low monthly lease payment. With that, Sebastian Coons has the traffic here on Green 960. Show on Green 960, the long-promised 9/11 hour. I'm glad we were finally able to make it work for you, and thanks to Richard Gage and Michael Shermer for several times adjusting their schedules to help us make this work out. Richard Gage, let me allow you to clear off the table. I know that there are theories, and one thing I learned, which I've never known this before, going through all of this information, is that on the side that believes there should be more investigation and that the current investigations are highly questionable, there's also a theory that there are poison pills floating around the Internet, that some things being proposed are so absurd that they may, in fact, have been planted to make the 9/11 truth movement look silly. Can you brush some of those off the table for us so we won't have to deal with them today?
Well, sure. Thank you. There are a number of silly theories out there, such as directed energy weapons, no planes hitting the World Trade Center Twin Towers, where we know planes, we do know that planes did hit them, and many nuclear explosions because there's some radiation levels that may have been high. But all of these theories they don't have the kind of physical forensic evidence that the explosive controlled demolition hypothesis does. It's been well proven, and there's overwhelming physical evidence available on numerous qualified websites such as AE911truth.org, where people can look at it on our DVD, which is available online. They can see the squibs shooting out of the building 20, 40, and 60 stories below the collapsing canopy, ejecting at 200 feet per second, propelled by explosive speeds.
Okay, what about the theory that the planes were either remote controlled or from either on the ground or from another plane above?
Well, we're building technical professionals, and we look at the buildings. It's entirely plausible that the planes could have been under remote control. A real investigation would determine some of these things. It is curious that several of the hijackers that have been named in the first 48 hours of 9/11 have turned up alive and have been interviewed by the London Guardian and the BBC.
Okay, I think Michael Shermer has some thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, see, to Americans, all those Middle Eastern names kind of roll off the tongue not so well, and so we tend to confuse similar-sounding names or similarly spelled names. That claim has been looked into. None of those people have been interviewed. They're not alive. They're dead. And that's the end of that. I think in terms of the silliness of the claims, we've already reached that. I mean, the idea, once you go down the road that there were planted bombs, that means there was a fairly elaborate conspiracy involving hundreds or thousands of people planting those bombs and orchestrating it and so forth. Where are all these people? Not one person who knew somebody or saw somebody wants to go on Larry King Live and tell the story, write a tell-all book. Look what happens to government officials when they resign from their government posts. What do? They all write books. They all write these books about what Bush really did, and they're all very critical of the Bush administration. There's no attempt to squelch the criticisms of the Bush administration on any given talk show, political talk show on any given night. They parade them out there. Where are the people that were involved in the 9/11 inside job?
I don't think anybody is going to be signing up for a lifetime or death sentence based on confessions of that they murdered 3,000 people.
I mean just the people that knew somebody, like, hey, my boyfriend, you know, this is really weird, he disappeared in the middle of the night, and I really suspected things, and I want to tell what I saw. Nobody.
Yeah.
You know what, Richard Gage, if I can piggyback onto that, in discussing this with my ex-husband who works for NASA, he's just intimately acquainted with how well the government works, and he said, they're not competent enough to do this, to keep all of those mouths closed. So how would you answer that?
Well, I don't know that it was people in the government per se either. I mean, we don't know who was involved. I mean, there's several very competent people who in corporations in the defense industry that are completely capable of pulling something like this off. But again, we're technical building professionals. We're demanding a real investigation based on the forensic evidence that we know exists. There is no question about it. And a real skeptic should be looking at the science-based forensic evidence and making a determination to call for a real investigation based on that. But that's not what Michael Shermer is doing. He's involved in part of this cover-up and hand-waving and not really willing to look at this evidence.
This is a good time to take a breath, I think. So let's do that. And we're going to go to the phones as promised. Jerry in Petaluma has been hanging on for some time, so let's bring him on board. The rest of you, there's a line available if you care to call in. 866-960-5753. 866-960-5753. Comment on our live blog. I'm getting to some of those shortly, too. That's green960.com, the Angie Cuero page. Jerry, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you, Angie. I have a very simple, basic question. If there's nothing to hide, how come all the security films of the alleged plane that hit the Pentagon, they've all been confiscated and they've never been released?
You know,
what,
Jerry, let me question you on that, because you said alleged plane, and I know that Richard Gage had said he's not a believer in the no-plane theory. Do you believe there may not have been a plane involved there?
Well, if it was that large of an airplane, why is there a small hole in the Pentagon? And where's all the wreckage, the engines?
Okay, let's let Michael tackle that.
Well, actually, if you go to skeptic.com, you can see our big article on 9/11. If you go to Popular Mechanics, they have one even more extensive. And they have a four-color picture of the American Airlines piece of the plane right there on the lawn in front of the Pentagon.
All right.
So unless a bunch of guys swept in and dropped it by helicopter to fool us all, it sure looks like a plane hit it.
Richard Gage?
Well, there is a lot of serious problems at the Pentagon. We haven't researched it very carefully ourselves because there's so much evidence to look at with the buildings. But the key question is, why was the FBI, several key questions. One, why was the FBI at the hotel nearby and the gas station confiscating the tapes within 5 minutes? Of the Pentagon, and by the way, no planes at the buildings at the Twin Towers does not mean that there was no planes at the Pentagon. They're separate issues. There are plenty of problems with the Pentagon, and if we had a real investigation, we could find out exactly what happened, but we have never had one there either. Jerry is absolutely correct. There's been nothing but secrecy. These five frames that they released did not show a plane whatsoever.
Although, Richard, I have to say,
hundreds of cameras.
As a layperson, though, I would have to ask. I mean, here's an event where the United States was apparently attacked. I mean, wouldn't the FBI just standard procedure seize everything until they got it sorted through?
Within 5 minutes?
Okay, I'll take that over to Michael Shermer.
Well,
is that too short a window for you there?
5 minutes. I mean, a lot of junk gets thrown out on these web pages, and this person saw that and reported this or that. 5 minutes, maybe it was 10 minutes, maybe it was an hour, who knows? I mean, in any case, all of this is subject to the hindsight bias. Once you already know what happened, and then what you do is reconstruct it in a linear fashion, like, well, if it happened this way, then this should have happened, and this should, they should have shot down the planes, they should have known this was going to happen, they should have done this and that. That's only hindsight. Of course, everybody was in chaos. And so during that, there's going to be a lot of weird, anomalous things that happened when there's so many people involved in a tragedy like this. So
yes,
the way it works is our minds then search for these little anomalies, ignoring the vast body of evidence. I already said Osama bin Laden said he did it. They tried to do it in 93. They have a track record of blowing stuff up. All American stuff all around the world, embassies and whatnot. Why would you doubt that they would do exactly what
they said they did? Actually, he did not say he did it. He came out within a few days after 9/11, and he put out a tape saying, I did not do this. If you want to know who did this, consult the secret government within your own government who wants to make this
century of conflict
between Christian and Islam.
We have the video.
Okay, gentlemen, you've been really, really good about not talking over each other. So, Richard, quickly finish your thought. We'll have Michael respond, then back to the phones.
And then in December, the Defense Department finds in a house this other tape, which appears not to be Osama bin Laden at all and has a horrible translation, in which that's the confession tape that was played to all of us. Theoretically, but this is clearly not Osama bin Laden. Anybody can tell. Google Fatty Osama. You can see the difference yourself. So what we look at with our section engineers is the physical evidence, such as the unignited thermite chips, nano thermite, high-tech thermite, extremely small particles. This stuff is not made in a cave in Afghanistan, but it's found in all the dust samples.
Okay, let's let Michael answer quickly and then to the phone.
Well, I don't know. You just get focused on thermite. Who knows? I haven't looked into it. I mean, like the entire 9/11 conspiracy rests on thermite. What if you're wrong? What if that isn't what they saw?
So what? No,
so
please,
what?
Michael,
what does that mean?
Okay, I think, gentlemen, we've reached a point where you're not going to agree with each other, and that's where we have to let it go. You're not going to agree, so we're going to go. In fact, let me go to the live blog, because I really haven't been good about doing that, but screen960.com, the Angie Claro page. Hawk brings up something that has been repeated from day one, and I believe that I heard this to be true as well. Willie Brown, mayor of San Francisco, said very plainly that he was told not to fly on 9/11. There are other prominent people who have made the same claims. Michael Shermer, what do we do with that information? It's very odd to tell a mayor not to get on a plane.
Yeah, well, so he says. I mean, where's the evidence for that? Don't forget, after Katrina, there were all these conspiracy theories about how the Bush administration orchestrated the collapse of the levees, and people said they heard explosive devices, and people found debris of explosive devices. None of that has ever panned out. That's just a typical conspiracy theory, just mixing facts with lies and half-truths and exaggerations and stories. Again, I come back to the central point. Who do you think did this? How did they do it? Where are these people? I mean, this would be the crime of the century. Why aren't people being charged with this crime?
Richard Gates, I know that you said that your focus is as an architect and that you're working with engineers, et cetera. Are there theories that you think hold water about who would do such a thing?
And three bullet holes in his head. You're going to not ask who did it, why did they do it, how did they do it. You're going to examine the physical forensic evidence found at the crime scene and pull out every resource you can in order to accomplish that. And that's what we would expect from any true skeptic.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Daryl in Richmond is next up with a question for us. Hey, Daryl, how are you? Go right ahead with your question.
Well, I was more of a statement. He was talking about the squibs blowing out lower floors. If you had that much compression from the building falling down, wouldn't you see explosive-type blowouts of windows and or debris from the massive compression falling on from the building coming down the top?
You
have these ejections that occur not at random places, but at highly focalized points between in the middle between the corners of the buildings, and they're occurring. They're pulverized building materials. They're not puffs of air. They eject out at over 200 feet per second, which can only be propelled by explosives, and they're 60 stories down below this ensuing destruction. So clearly, they are indeed explosives. They're not what NIST tells us they are.
A quick comment, Michael?
Yeah, when the floors are collapsing, they're pushing the air between the two floors, which is, I mentioned the building is mostly empty space of air, in which there's smoke. So when the floor collapses, you can see in the video the little so-called squibs. They're not squibs. They're big, huge puffs of air that are being pushed out by the collapsing floors above, and they go out just as the floors above them are collapsing down. It's exactly what you'd expect.
If you had a floor pushing air down, you would have many windows perhaps blowing out. Not these highly focalized ejections that occur at the midpoints between the columns of the buildings at 200 feet per second. This is not a puff of air.
In any case, if you look at videos of buildings intentionally brought down, they collapse from the bottom up. The explosives go from the bottom up, and then the building collapses.
Okay,
World Trade Center buildings, they collapse from the top down and right at the point where the planes hit. Why would they collapse from the point where the planes hit?
Yeah, let's talk about that. It turns out that controlled demolitions can start anywhere you want. We have on our website examples of at least a couple of controlled demolitions that start from the top down. You can see them there. In this case, if you wanted to blame a building collapse on fire due to airplane, due to terrorists, you would start the progression of demolition rings, explosions, which the firemen were recorded, 100 firemen recorded orally saying there were sounds of explosions like going all the way around the building like a belt at the onset of this collapse. They saw flashes of light. Dozens of them saw flashes of light and heard sounds of explosions. We didn't know about this until August of 2005 when the city of New York was sued by the New York Times.
Richard?
Yep.
Oh, God, you just ended so abruptly. I thought, oh, they cut him off. We're going to keep both of you on here. I do need to go to traffic because the clock has caught us again, and there are one or two questions I have for each of you when we come back, and we'll get to as many calls and comments from the live blog as we can. I'm Angie Cuero. You are listening to Richard Gage, founding member of AE911Truth.org, and Michael Shermer, founding publisher of Skeptic Magazine. We've got Sebastian Coons on the traffic here. When we come back, we're going back to the live blog, green960.com, the Angie Cuero page. And I get suspicious when I hear things like, oh, it just disappeared because everything looks suspicious now. Sebastian Coons, thank you so much. Not to make light of it, it's an important and serious subject. The 9/11 investigations, how valid they are, what other theories are out there. And I want to thank Solar City again for making this a limited commercial interruption. You know that normally you hear Sebastian and then you hear three or four commercials, and that's not happening. SolarCity.com wants you to know that you can save energy and money, and coincidentally, you can save the world. Visit them at SolarCity.com, and if you care to, click the contact button and tell them you're grateful they were willing to do that for us today, because I'm very willing they were able to do this. We go right to Ron, who is calling in from San Francisco. Ron, thank you for waiting. You're up. Hi, Ron. Are you with us, Ron? No, we don't have him, so we're going to go instead to Chris, who is calling from Orinda, who likewise has been waiting. Chris, you are on the air.
The call. There's one watches the video of World Trade Center 2 collapsing. A few seconds after the initial collapse, you can view the top fifth of the building, roughly a 200-by-200-foot cube, that's sloughing over. That's at an angle, I'll say 25 degrees with a vertical. And then all of a sudden you see it there, you see it as a total cube, this huge structure, and then a few microseconds later, the whole thing vaporizes and turns to dust. And my question is, if gravity and fire are the only energy forces we have to work with, if there wasn't controlled demolition, then how can you explain the vaporization of the top fifth of that building into dust? Why didn't it just continue to slough over and bang down into the side of the building?
Thanks
How
for
did
being
the
concise.
Top of the building blow up?
Okay, thanks for being concise. Chris, we go to Michael on that.
Right. Well, it did start to collapse straight over, and then the rest of the floors beneath it collapsed, and it went straight down. So it did exactly.
Well, nobody was surprised. That's the problem right there. It goes straight down. We have a 22-degree falling of the top fifth of this building, but then it's off its center of axis. In other words, it's not available to push the rest of the building straight down. But that's exactly what happens. We have rings of explosions once again that do go straight down symmetrically at free fall speed, almost within a second of free fall speed.
So, Richard, do you mean to tell me that you think that the planes were flowing in at just the right angle and hit at just the right place where the already pre-planted bombs were located, and that then somebody timed the explosive devices to go off just after the planes hit? Is that what you think happened?
Well, it's not just after the planes hit. We had 56 minutes of fire is what we had.
So I'm saying you have a double conspiracy here. Somebody had to plant the bombs and somebody had to fly the planes. And that all had to be timed just right, carefully.
Well, it doesn't have to be timed. I mean, the planes went in, and 56 minutes later, we have a series of explosions that go off. But listen to the physics. You're not listening, Michael.
Wait, one more question. You think the people that run FEMA and any other government agency are capable of doing two conspiracies like that?
Yeah, I don't know what they're capable of. I'm trying to point out to you the physical evidence at the crime scene.
Michael, let him finish answering, please. Richard, go ahead.
We have a fifth of this building leaning 25 degrees off of center, and then if that's true, we'd expect to see that mass of building in some clump down at the bottom, but it does disintegrate into its structural steel elements, as the gentleman alluded to, and then after that, we have a complete free fall, a series of explosions that go down the building symmetrically, even though the damage up above was completely asymmetrical. That defies the laws of physics. I encourage you to go to our website and study this. It's extremely important.
Okay, Heidi, if she has not yet, we'll put up both the websites on our live blog, green960.com. Again, we've reached an impasse on this one, so we're going to move on to something else. Michael Shermer, I have to tell you that in my research, there was only one thing that struck me that really should be addressed, just in points of logistics. I'm going to give you my own question. I'm taking this off Wikipedia, but I looked at the sources, and they all seem valid. There's a three-minute discrepancy reported in the cockpit voice recording immediately prior to Flight 93's crash. The cockpit voice recorder transcripts end at 10:03 a.m. Cleveland Air Traffic Control reports Flight 93 went out of radar contact 3 full minutes later, 10:06 a.m. FAA records also record 10:06 a.m. Seismologists record an impact at 10:06 a.m. Despite this, the 9/11 Commission report concluded the crash occurred at 10:03 a.m. Now, being in radio, I can tell you 3 minutes is a really long time to be unaccounted for. What do you think of that?
No idea. Never read that. Don't know anything about that.
Do you think it's worthy of an investigation?
Well, I suppose in terms of mopping up the minutia of the event. But all of these are premised on the idea of what's called the argument from personal incredulity. I personally cannot accept the theory that X happened or the explanation X. Therefore, none of it could have happened or none of it could have happened the way the government said it did or whatever.
But to be honest, it's
possible. I mean, in fact, when you have tens of thousands of bits of data floating around, it's entirely possible to find anomalies that don't seem to fit in any theory. But that doesn't mean the whole theory is wrong. It just means there's anomalies we have yet to explain. So, yeah, sure. I mean, somebody, go look it up. Why not? But that doesn't mean the Bush administration orchestrated 9/11. By the way, the simple answer to how we know the Bush administration did not orchestrate 9/11, it worked.
I'm not even going to touch that. We're going back to the phones. James in Kernville, you're next up here on Green 960. Hi, James.
Hello. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Anyways, I just had a quick question for Michael, and that's that if he's so sure that this was not a conspiracy or anything, why not open a complete investigation that's completely open with both skeptics and other people involved, too?
Yeah, I mean, of course, but hasn't this already been done? I mean, this is like the ufologists who, when Clinton opened up the records and including on Roswell and everything else, Area 51, and they found scene. They couldn't find any government conspiracies. The ufologists simply said, oh, well, they hit it. It wasn't an open investigation. the conspiracy theorists, they don't want an open investigation. They want confirmation of their conspiracy theory, and they'll accept nothing less.
Well, let's see if Richard agrees with that characterization. Richard, do you think the investigation so far have incorporated both skeptics and people with more open minds?
No. The investigations have not acknowledged the physical evidence at the crime scene for the complete dismemberment of both Twin Towers and Building 7. The tons of molten metal found underneath all three buildings, including Nat Avarice equipment on USGS overflights, infrared sensing, which showed temperatures far hotter than could be there under with normal office fires. And they did not show the squibs. They did not show the evidence for thermite, unignited thermite chips with nanothermite. This is not an open investigation whatsoever. In fact, it was the most secretive investigation in the history of such investigations and the most underfunded. Compare the $600,000 that FEMA got to the $40 million that was used to try to investigate Bill Clinton's affair with Monica Lewinsky. It is completely allocated. It took a year for the 9/11 Commission report, the 9/11 Commission to be formed by the Bush administration under incredible pressure from the families who are still seeking justice to this day and who support our cause.
Okay, let's get back to the phones here. You are listening to Richard Gage and Michael Shermer. We're talking about 9/11. This is the Angie Coiro Show, and we move on over to Dan, who's calling from Marin. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I'd just like to say I don't know what Mr. Gage's agenda is. There's certainly nothing wrong with more investigation, but he's obviously, although he won't really say it, he's on the conspiracy theory angle. And I agree with the other gentleman, Mr. Shermer.
Dan, can I ask you, rather than characterize Richard Gage personally, what is it that he's saying that you take issue with?
I'm taking issue. I said have another investigation. But what he's implying is a conspiracy, and I agree with both you and Mr. Shermer. They can't hide the sex lives of these politicians. Can you imagine hiding what it would have taken to cover this up? It's insane, and it's a waste of time. Just go for the investigation.
Are you willing to look at the evidence on our website? That's what I
want to see it on your website. Let's get it investigated. Your website has an agenda, and you're obviously convinced that more took place than did. Maybe Osama bin Laden was smarter than you gave him credit for, but it isn't some cover-up.
Okay, we're going to let that stand as a comment rather than question. We're going to move over to Ron, who's in San Francisco. Hey, Ron.
Okay, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have
you. Okay. Listen, I've got a question for this gentleman. You know, I've always looked at the 9/11 and looked at that date, and I've looked at the Pentagon. Now, I heard him say that there's a piece of a wing. If you went to the site, you'd see a piece of the wing. If I'm not mistaken, that was a 737 airplane, right?
Is that true, Michael?
And it was supposed to have bounced off the ground before it hit the Pentagon.
It's part of the plane that looks like an American Airlines, which is
Yeah, it's supposed to be a 737. I think that flight was.
If it wasn't a plane that hit the Pentagon, where did that American Airlines flight go? Because it disappeared.
Wait a minute. I didn't say it wasn't. I said it was supposed to be. But what I'm asking you, it was supposed to have bounced off the ground before it hit the Pentagon.
Richard, does that agree with your facts?
So.
Let me ask Richard, is that your facts as well, Richard, that it was supposed to have bounced?
That's what I remember reading. I'll look it up on a Google, and I'll let you know.
Okay, Ron, I need you to hold your fire for just a second. Richard, have you heard that this plane bounced first?
Well, so the point is that the hole in the Pentagon is at the bottom of the hole is at ground. Problem is that the 9-foot diameter jet engines were lower than the fuselage, so if the hole in the Pentagon was breached by the fuselage, the jet engines would have given a big trough through the grass, and the grass was unmarked. I think that's Ron's point.
Ron, is that your point?
That's my point. Also, I've got something else to say.
Quickly, please.
If this is a 737, those engines are 9 feet long. Where are they? If that plane hit the Pentagon, it put a hole all through all five rings in a straight line. A straight line.
Okay.
Where are the engines and the wings and the fuselage of that plane? Because that hole is only 18 feet high, and that plane is 60 feet high.
Let's get a quick response from Michael Shermer. We're short on the clock here.
Yeah. Well, if that American Airlines flight did not hit the Pentagon, where's the plane? Because the plane disappeared off radar just before it hit, and it's gone. So,
do you have any answer to his question about where the engines might have been?
Yeah, the flight recorder records the plane being 400 feet above the Pentagon, and that's something that the Pilots for 9/11 Truth have documented. You can take a look at their website, pilotsfor911truth.com.
In fact, I'm going to ask you.
I think they just disintegrated. I mean, it's a big, thick, huge building.
Okay, guys, that's where we're going to have to leave it. I'm very grateful to both of you. You're very civil, you're very thorough, and you've gotten to the point quickly, and I thank you for that. And as promised at the very beginning, we have reached no conclusions here because I think we can't. But I do hope we gave you some food for thought and that we gave you some guidance as to where to go look for more information. Websites of both gentlemen are posted online at green960.com, the Angie Coro page. My thanks to Michael Shermer of Skeptic Magazine and Richard Gage of AE911truth.org. Heidi Hartley worked really hard to put this hour together. Thank you so much, Heidi. And Robert has some great new sound for the show. I thank him for that. Chris Mason does our website. Sebastian Coons is on the traffic. John Scott is God. I'm Angie Claro. Thanks to David Gans for our new closing music. And I thank you for tuning in today. We'll see you tomorrow. Don't forget, never flush your cat litter. Bye.